Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, Milwaukee Mab fans, and once again, it's I, Wayne Klingman, of the Milwaukee Mab, and I'm here to bring you another, I think, out-of-the-park show. Some of you may have been blessed to hear Mr. Henry, as in the great, famous, good-looking Lurie Henry, and I talked about Hoffa and some ideas around that. But today, the show that he will bring us on Hot Springs, Arkansas, will blow your mind. And I suspect you should be sitting down with heavy drinking ability nearby, maybe something to smoke, because it will be that crazy, and every word he says is true. So let's, no further ado, let's bring in the God of Information himself, he who racks an all-time high, I mean, of course, the famous Lurie Henry. Good morning, good morning, sir.
Hey, Wayne, how you doing? Are you suggesting listeners need a shot of an adult beverage nearby before we begin?
I would have been starting drinking a half an hour before, because the stuff that you'll be talking about will blow my mind. And I'm a kind of a jaded guy. I just can't think what would do the mind of some poor innocent young man or woman.
Well, let's start. And I know you have a lot of questions, and we'll get to it, Wayne. But let's start with sort of a scene setter. You know, we talked about Las Vegas. We talked about last week Jimmy Hoffa, all the influence he had nationally, springing from the Detroit area, and of course becoming a national figure. And by the way, Hoffa had a role in Hot Springs, which we can get to. But the scene setter is this: Arkansas is bordered on the north by Missouri, on the south by Louisiana, kind of a central location. In the center of the state, tucked into the mountainous area, is Hot Springs. Now, it became a sort of a vacation spot, a resort spot, because of geothermal waters, and people would go to enjoy the spa. Lo and behold, Major League Baseball teams began to hold their spring training games and spring training events there. And those players got involved in gambling and taking advantage. In fact, New York Giants manager John McGraw was even arrested in Hot Springs for conducting a gambling game on the lawn of a hotel. So he was let go. And no charges, I don't think charges ultimately were brought against him. But it was always sort of a notorious town. Now, we'll get into the casinos that were Vegas before Las Vegas. But can I take you back a step to the late 1900s and a shootout?
Please. Please.
Everybody knows, Wayne, about the OK Corral out in Tombstone, Arizona. You had a shootout. By the way, this goes to show you the way Hollywood will begin to paint an image of something that becomes untrue. The shootout wasn't at the OK Corral. It was down the road at a photographic studio outside of a photographer studio. That didn't sound probably as glamorous as the OK Corral, but that's neither here nor there. So what happened in I think it was 1881, a shootout at the OK Corral, Wyatt Earp, law enforcement type shooting it out with this group called the Cowboys, three dead. All right. 8 years later, 1899, on the streets of Hot Springs, the main drag, Bath House Row, where all these spas are to this day, where the saloons and casinos and bordellos were, there was a shootout between the sheriff's office and the police department. I'm not laughing. I mean, it's tragic. I'm just, it's the irony of what happened. But five law enforcement people were killed on the streets of Hot Springs in a shootout over the issue of gambling casinos. Now, okay, the OK Corral became a big deal because in the 30s, a book was written about it and a movie was made, I think, in 1957. So Hollywood took a whole of it and made a big deal out of it. No one has ever really blown up the Hot Springs shooting. But to me, three dead at the OK Corral, 8 years later, five dead on the main drag in Hot Springs in a gun battle between two law enforcement agencies. The second gun battle of the day, by the way. The Force gun battle erupted earlier in the day between these same participants, the sheriff's office and the police department, over who was backing the pro-gambling mayor and who was backing someone who wanted to be less pro-gambling. They'd had a little mini shootout. There's no shootout that's mini, of course. I think 14 shots were fired. That's not mini. But M-I-N-I, not mini, as in small. 14 shots were fired in that first confrontation. About 3 hours later, sheriff's department and police officials got together to try to heal things because the sheriff had been arrested. And the prosecutor released him on bail. So they met at a saloon. That blew up into a big, huge, heated gun battle on the streets of Hot Springs. Five people were killed, four from the police department. So for years and years after that, Wayne, the sheriff's office, now everything is fine. But for years after that, the sheriff's office and police department in Hot Springs had issues. Now, this was 1899. It seems like ancient history, but keep in mind, Major League Baseball teams were coming to Hot Springs then. It was the dawn of the modern era. Ernest Hemingway was born in 1899, and you know, 14, 15 years later, World War I broke out. So it's really not the old, dusty, Wild West image you may think. It was a crowded street with casinos, saloons. Tourists left town after the shootout, so that just sort of sets the stage on sort of the lawlessness that has always been Hot Springs' reputation, Wayne.
Wow. I had no idea. None.
Nobody does. Here's the funny thing about it. I got to know last week I was in Hot Springs, and I got to know a fascinating guy. He wrote a book that is just fantastic, called The Mob at the Spa. Orville Albrin, he's a gentleman in his 80s now. He was an FBI employee. His book is fantastic. He worked out of the FBI office in Hot Springs, grew up in Hot Springs, and was a documents guy, records guy for them. Their resident agent was a guy named Clay White, a real legendary FBI guy in Hot Springs, but Orville worked for the FBI, and so his eye for records and details, phenomenal. And so he attributes everything. He gives the documentation. So I got to know Orville last week and was talking to him in Hot Springs. I didn't know the story about that. It transcends the bigness of the OK Corral. To me, it's stunning. Three killed in Tombstone, five in Hot Springs. Now, in Tombstone, it was good guys versus bad guys. Now, I know the good guys and the bad guys, there's some good and some bad on both sides, but Hot Springs had two more killed, and they were between law enforcement agencies. So, yeah, so that says it was all over gambling, all over gambling, all over the open and illegal gambling that Hot Springs was known for. To this day, by the way, there is some gambling in Hot Springs at the famous Oaklawn racetrack. It's slot machines, but you can still gamble, the only place in the state of Arkansas where you can gamble to this day.
Legally. I mean, as I mentioned today, we have great laws here in Wisconsin that supposedly controls video gambling, right? Great,
yes.
Fantastic. Yet within six blocks of where I live, in 5 minutes, I can be in front of a machine and gamble all day and all night. it is what it is. You know, many people like to do what the law doesn't want them to do, which is a whole other topic. A whole other show, but it still means to me that's a lot of money in gambling to get law enforcement people of all things to go out with guns and try to kill one another. Means there must be a lot of money involved.
Two shootouts in one day. They had two shootouts in one day on the main drag in a city that was at that time one of the most popular gambling resorts in the country, in which Major League Baseball teams were coming for spring training. Now they go out to Arizona, and, you know, Tampa, Florida, and Clearwater and places like that. But at that time, to think about it, and you're right, Wayne, to this day, you can download on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer, Twin Spires, which is the Churchill Downs company, the Daily Racing Form. You can download their app, Twin Spires, others. you legally can place bets on horse races all over the place, watch them on your phone, place wagers on horse races. So, you know, we've kind of gone from a period where there were a lot of huge, huge money grabs and conflicts over gambling to now at least horse racing is legal on our phones. And a lot of people predict so too at some point will sports bets be legal.
Yes.
On our phones too, if not full-on casino-type gambling on our phones, craps, blackjack, things like that.
Right. We'll see what the future brings. But going back to Hyatt Springs, which seems to be a place I must visit, what are the things that's going on in Hyatt Springs that we may not know about?
Well, here's the funny thing about it. I mean, I love Hot Springs. Incline Village at Lake Tahoe and Hot Springs are two of my favorite places because they're just cool places. There's just, you know, the atmosphere is fantastic. People there sort of get it. Hot Springs is still that way. It's still a nice tourist town because of the thermal bath and also the history. But here's the thing that really started to pop in Hot Springs. When the Depression hit, and bootlegging began, and you and I talked, excuse me, Wayne, you and I talked last week about, you know, the Al Capones of the world in Chicago, out in New York. You had, you know, the Meyer Lanskys and the Lucky Lucianos, and, you know, all these bootleggers began to make a lot of money during Prohibition and the Depression. The only place really in the country that had a concentrated, open atmosphere for gambling was Hot Springs. You had casinos in Chicago, New Orleans, Miami, New York. Clearly, you could play poker and roll dice in back rooms and taverns and bars. But in Hot Springs, they were what are now sort of like Vegas-style casinos, smaller, but and wide open. This FBI employee I was talking about that I spoke with last week, had lunch with last week in Hot Springs, was telling me about when he was a boy, he would walk down the street in Hot Springs. Back then, you had to get your races over the wire. And so the casinos would hire people to read the races as though they were happening. He said you would walk down the main drag in Hot Springs and pass by these casinos and hear people yelling and screaming, you know, go, you know, go Trojan. I mean, yelling for the horses as though they were live races. But what happened was it became a place, Johnny Torrio from Chicago and then his, you know, Capone went with Torrio. And then when Capone took over those rackets in Chicago, he would go to Hot Springs and would stay at a place that's still, by the way, in business called the Arlington. I've got some video of it on my YouTube channel. And Bugs Moran, even his rival, would go. It was kind of a no shoot zone, Hot Springs. All the mobsters knew and gangsters knew you could go to Hot Springs. You would check in with the cops. This FBI guy I talked to last week said Bottles, who was Al Capone's brother, would go over to the police department and say, "We're in town. Give a little donation to the police benevolent fund," which whether it actually made it to the fund or not is questionable. In other words, you know, the politicians and cops and everybody, you know, everybody was bought off. And then they would gamble, man, right across the street from the Arlington. I've got it on my YouTube channel. It's a place called the Southern Club. It's a wax museum now. It's right across the street. Capone, by the way, once paid a cab driver in the 30s $100, which, you know, then was a lot of money to drive him from the Southern Club to the Arlington. But wide open casinos, craps tables. I think the Southern had, I don't know, 15, 16 craps tables. I don't know the exact number, slot machines. Now, keep in mind, too, Wayne, in Las Vegas at that time, we're talking 20s, 30s, 40s, actually into the 60s. 1967 is when a reformist governor shut down the casinos. But before we get to that, when Capone, Meyer Lansky, Lucky Luciano, Albert Anastasia, Frank Costello, all those guys were coming to Hot Springs, Vegas really wasn't much. Bugsy Siegel, who was also a Hot Springs frequent visitor, it wasn't until 1947 that the Flamingo, under Bugsy Siegel and Wilkerson and others, was built. And then it wasn't until the 60s, I think 66, that Caesar's Palace on the Strip, you know, sort of kicked off. So we're talking about Vegas was really just a dot in the desert. Yes, they had some gaming, but nowhere near the action and the excitement and so forth that Hot Springs had. So that's what sort of made Hot Springs. And then, they, you know, for instance, Meyer Lansky had a had a son who had cerebral palsy, and so he began to go there for the baths, but also for the gaming atmosphere. Plus, Oak Lawn Racetrack. You know, these aren't guys who, when they took vacations, Wayne would wanted to kind of hike in the woods or camp. These guys wanted to go gamble and bet the horses. And Hot Springs had that. To this day, Oak Lawn,
wow. As
you know, is one of the most significant thoroughbred racetracks in the country. So, and it was there then. It's been there since 1905. So that's sort of what made Hot Springs Las Vegas before Las Vegas was anything.
Incredible. That is amazing to say.
A lot of those places are still there, too. A lot of those buildings are still there. There's a fantastic museum there, a mob museum there. So what would happen is, I'll give you an example. We talked about Lucky Luciano a second ago. I know everybody knows who he is. He's the person who sort of coalesced the mob back in the 30s and brought factions together and created a commission that really sort of oversaw mob activity around the country. He used to vacation in Hot Springs. Now, when the prosecutor, with a prosecutor named Dewey, began to press him and law enforcement officials began to seek him to arrest him on prostitution rackets in the 30s in New York, he got out of town. He went to Philly. He contacted a lover of his named Gay Orlova, a Russian singer. He met her in Cleveland. They drove down to Hot Springs, checked in with the cops, checked in with the mayor. Everything was absolutely above board and good to go. And then one day, Luciano, staying at the Arlington, which is still in Hot Springs, still in business, built in 1924, he told Orlova, and by the way, her name was Gay Orlova. He called her Gay All Over. That was sort of his nickname for her. I guess you can make conjectures about why, but he decided to take a stroll with a friendly cop one day, a crooked cop who, you know, took payola. So Luciano and this Hot Springs cop just taking a friendly, sort of afternoon or morning, to be honest with you, just taking a stroll, went to by the clubs, and one of the other famous clubs in town was the Ohio Club. At about where the Ohio Club is, which is still there, though, by the way, still a bar in Hot Springs. I think it's the oldest bar in Arkansas. They cross the street to Bathhouse Road, just taking a nice stroll and bump into a New York detective. Now, this New York detective was in Hot Springs chasing down a separate criminal. They didn't know Luciano was in Hot Springs, presumably. But there was another bad guy they were looking for who apparently had some dog that he had taken with him, committed a crime in New York, fled to Hot Springs, as everybody did. Fled to Hot Springs. This New York detective and one of his buddies went to chase this guy, this bad guy with the dog. Saw a guy with a dog. They thought it might be him. So he was walking down the street trying to find this guy, bumps into Luciano. Lucky, what are you doing here? Well, just hang it. Yeah, you know, so, and he was with a Hot Springs cop. And so, as it turns out, long, long story short, the New York police detective, with some convincing, was able to get the Hot Springs police department, just too much pressing. They jailed Luciano. That began a massive extradition fight. Arkansas officials were trying to protect him, didn't want to extradite him locally or at state level. Finally, it got kicked up to a higher court in Little Rock. This dragged on. Newspapers were writing about it. An attorney general in Arkansas who wanted to run for governor took the pro-law enforcement stance. They extradited Luciano on a midnight train under law enforcement guard to St. Louis and then back to New York, where he faced charges. Dewey stuck it to him on the prostitution rackets, and he went to prison. And until he was deported after helping the government during the war. So, you know, crazy story. But all that, and there are a million things, Wayne, in Hot Springs like that. It just never ends. It's a place where, let me give you a couple more quick examples of how significant Hot Springs was to the mobsters. Frank Costello, who was obviously you know, sort of the chairman of the board for the mob in New York, and Albert Anastasia, Murder Inc.'s hitman. I mean, Albert Anastasia was later gunned down in the 50s while getting a haircut and a shave. And by the way, the chair he was in is that. Wayne?
Okay, can you hear me now, sir?
Hey, Wayne, sorry about that. I guess we somehow lost connection.
It does that. I know when people use a cell phone, that sometimes happens. And sometimes when aircraft fly overhead, that knocks people off there. I'm not sure why that would occur.
Right, right. Well, I'm a complete cell phone guy. I'm a no-landline guy. Were we on Luciano? Where did we...
Yes, we're on Luciano.
Sort of
it's midnight train back to New York.
What, midnight train back to New York. The prosecutor stuck him with prosecution charges, convicted him, and he was sent away to prison in the prostitution racket's conviction, and then later deported after helping the government during World War II. He was deported. His sentence was commuted. So, you know, the Luciano story, that's just one that shows how high level, Wayne, all these people were in that underworld who ended up in Hot Springs.
Right.
Now, there are, you know, everybody knows who Frank Costello is, the chairman of the board for the mafia in that day. Albert Anastasia, the Murder Inc. hitman, the notorious murderous trigger puller for the mob back in New York. They both were rumored to be, at one point, they frequent visitors to Hot Springs. They were rumored to be considering moving back to Hot Springs. Neither did move permanently to Hot Springs. Locals ran those casinos with an iron fist. Some of these folks tried to break in, like Costello. Carlos Marcello of New Orleans later got into the race wire. I'll talk about that in a sec. But neither moved back to Hot Springs. One guy did. There was a guy named Oney Madden, an Irish beer baron and gangster in New York. Ed Sullivan, the television variety show host in later years, said that if you needed anything done in New York, you went and saw Oney Madden. The FBI called him the clay pigeon for all the times he'd been shot coming up on the streets as a racketeer in New York. As it so happens, though, he had also gone to Hot Springs a lot. Before he went, though, one time, Dutch Schultz, the racketeer back in New York who was rubbed out by the underworld for suggesting Dewey be assassinated. Dutch Schultz told Oney Madden, listen, man, you're going back to Hot Springs, great place, you'll love it. You need to go check out a gift shop next to the Ohio Club. There's a really good-looking woman who works there. Now, Dutch Schultz told Oney Madden, great casinos. He said there are a lot of great cat houses in Hot Springs, but check out this local girl. Oney Madden goes to Hot Springs, goes to this gift shop, buys a lot of stuff. Postmaster's daughter was working there, owned it, I think. It's called Agnes's. Her name was Agnes Demby. He asked her if she wanted to go out. She blew him off. Later called him at the Arlington. Rethought it. Thought, you know, maybe I ought to go out with this guy. You know, everybody knew these gangsters were bad guys. It just wasn't a big deal. So she went out with him. They ended up getting married. Now, the parole board, he was a convicted killer, Oney Madden, killed a guy. It was convicted of one, presumably killed others. So he moves back to Hot Springs, marries Agnes, and lived with the parole board's permission, Wayne, moved back to Hot Springs and lived there full time, and became a guy who, you know, gave money to charities. I talked to this guy who became an FBI employee that I was speaking of earlier. When he was a kid, 14, 15 years old, Oney Madden donated some sporting equipment to the Boys and Girls Club, baseball bats, gloves, you know, that kind of thing, basketball. So this guy, Orville Albritton, the future FBI employee, and Oney Madden, maybe the most notorious gangster of his time, carried the sporting equipment back together to the Boys and Girls Club. Now, Madden did get involved. He wasn't completely he didn't completely distance himself from illegal activity. He gambled, of course, like everybody did there. But he did get involved in the race wire with Carlos Marcello, the notorious New Orleans vice lord. So they did get involved in controlling the race wire. It came through what even to this day is called Telegraph, the road. It came through to the phone company on a wire that Oney Madden had control of before it went to the different bookies in the casino. So Oney Madden had the results on the races before others would get them. So he wasn't completely removed from criminal activity, but he basically kept his nose clean and became sort of a fixture in the community. So the only one of that kind of stature who ended up moving back there was Madden, but they all continued to come. They would pay their visits to Oney Madden. You know, I was talking to somebody who runs the mob, the gangster museum in Little Rock, who was telling me even some speculation Jack Ruby may have been there with Madden right before the of course Ruby was tied in obviously with, I mean everybody knows this, with a lot of gangsters and mobsters. But so anyway, yeah, it's just endless. A lot of it is, you know, what's verifiable and what's rumor, so that sort of gets mixed up, but clearly verifiable. A lot of these mobsters and what they did in Hot Springs.
That really makes sense, because Jack Ruby was close to the mob family in New Orleans.
Bill Carlos Marcello, a lot of speculation. Carlos Marcello, Santo Traficante in Tampa, and the Chicago outfit were conspired to take out the president, because his brother, who you and I have talked about this, Wayne, his brother Bobby, as the attorney general, was extremely aggressive in toppling the mob.
Right, and the whole Cuban problem, and not, you know, making sure that Castro was overthrown. It gets to be a big mess, and quickly runs into the spectrum of paranoia and conspiracy theory that nobody can really try to ever find out.
And you know, I mean, you and I've talked about it. You've got the lone shooter theory. You've got, some of the thinking is Marcello and Hoffa was in the middle of this. Their thinking was, there were recorded examples, at least reported, not recorded necessarily, examples of people like Hoffa and some of those mobsters being angry at Bobby Kennedy and suggesting he be taken out, the theory being that if you took out Bobby, the president, Jack, would come down hard, but if you took out Jack, Lyndon Johnson, who didn't like Bobby, would get rid of Bobby. So it was sort of, you know, you take out the president and the brother goes too. Now, who knows? I mean, that's all speculation. But clearly, you know, the mob activity of that era, a lot of it was centered on Hot Springs, Wayne. It's an amazing place to this day. It's an amazing place.
Let's bring this up now. Let's talk about how Hot Springs was finally cleaned up in the 60s.
Yeah, what happened was Dan Moldea, mob writer Dan Moldea, said accurately one time, you can't have organized crime without political corruption. Everybody from the State House to City Hall in Hot Springs, which is about an hour west of the State House of Little Rock, where the Capitol is, you know, there's speculation that everybody's palm was greased at one level or another. In the 60s, a reformist governor, Winthrop Rockefeller, was elected. Now, came from a wealthy family, you know, I mean, and just didn't think that that was what the state needed. So you would always have people who were anti-gambling and pro-gambling in the city, but at the state level, it was just ignored. So what happened was, Some neighborhood boys in Hot Springs one day were playing around and saw a bunch of slot machines. There were periods when it would be hot and cold. Look, we got to cool it. The law is on us. You know, politicians are running for reelection. Some are on an anti-gambling crusade, so we have to calm down. And so they put the slot machines in storage and, you know, sort of put them on ice until after the election and their guys won and all that stuff. So the slot machines, a lot of slot machines, several hundred were in storage in this barn, and some neighborhood boys playing, saw them and told the FBI agent in town, listen, we saw these slot machines. I don't know if the boys told the FBI agent, but it got back to the FBI agent. So the FBI agent, resident agent, and a state trooper, actually the head of the Highway Patrol, who had been with the FBI, got together, and Winthrop Rockefeller, the governor, told this head of the Highway Patrol, listen, do you have what it takes to take on those gamers down there? Because it's going to be the toughest fight you've ever fought. And so he said, yes, sir, I do. And so they went down there and began to bust up those machines, and the media attention and the focus. Everybody knew. It was funny, when I grew up in Louisiana, and I remember hearing about Carlos Marcello, and I remember hearing all the time, and this is just as a kid, you know, not somebody who really understood corruption and political influence and all that stuff. You would just hear about these, and I heard all the time about Hot Springs, people going up to Hot Springs to gamble, and, you know, my dad would talk about how Hot Springs is this place where all these mobsters hang out. It always made me wonder, because I didn't understand politics, I didn't understand, you know, how the law worked and all that. I always wondered why, you know, if everybody knows about Carlos Marcello in New Orleans and everybody knows about the mobsters in Hot Springs, why doesn't somebody do something about it? Well, that's what Rockefeller did. He went in there and busted it up and closed it down, shut it down. And that was it. That was 1967. Now, about that time, Caesar's Palace came on in 66, 67 in Las Vegas. That was a real big one on the strip across from the Flamingo, which had already been up and running. You had casinos in Las Vegas. But in the 50s at the Sands, where the Rat Pack hung out in Las Vegas, the Hollywood crowd began to bring a lot of attention from, you know, the 50s on to Las Vegas. More big casinos were built in Las Vegas, like Caesars. Hot Springs was shutting down. So at about that, there was sort of a crossover period, Wayne, where as Hot Springs was shutting down, and Havana, 1959, a bearded guy comes out of the mountains with his troops and takes over the corrupt Batista regime, and that's Castro. And so he shut down the casinos in Havana in 59. Rockefeller shuts down the casinos in Hot Springs in 67. Vegas blows up. Vegas just goes crazy, and, you know, the rest is history. Atlantic City comes online. Now we have Riverboat. You know what I mean, Wayne? In other words, when Hot Springs was sort of the last domino to fall that paved the way for places. Now, you know, Vegas would have been big anyway. I don't mean to say that, but at some point with the media attention, it would have been almost impossible to keep a place like Hot Springs going. Back when they used to grease the palms of those politicians, there was a less aggressive media, and there wasn't as quick a dissemination of news for those kind of things to get out. So it was, you know, but that sort of led to the end of it. But I will say this. There was an effort to try to hold on to some of that. There was a really famous club, and again, I put this on my YouTube channel. I shot some video of it last week. It's still there. It's a ministry now. There was a famous nightclub called The Vapors, in right off the main drag in Hot Springs. Had casino, had open tables. You know, there are a lot of historical famous pictures of all these places, including The Vapors, V-A-P-O-R-S. The Vapors was going strong. It was built in 60, right next door to a place called the Velda Rose, which was a really famous hotel also in Hot Springs. The Vapors stayed on for a long time afterwards, but without table games and traps and all that, it really couldn't make it. The guy who owned it ended up going, I think, to Turkey or somewhere where gambling was legal until they shut it down, and whatever, wherever he went, I think Turkey, I'm not sure, took a lot of his dealers with him. But the Vapors, in its day, was the hottest nightclub, one of the hottest nightclubs, certainly in the region, if not the country. You know, you get out of the Chicago's and New York's, clearly where the hot clubs, nightclubs are huge. But the Vapors was a stop-off point for everybody. Tony Bennett, Phyllis Diller, Liberace, they all came through the Vapors and stayed at the Velda Rose. In fact, Tony Bennett, he says in his autobiography, the song I Left My Heart in San Francisco, he'd gotten the sheet music from a guy in New York, I think, and practiced it and first performed at the Vapors on his way to the Fairmont in San Francisco. That's where that was launched. Also, the McGuire sisters, everybody knows about the famous relationship between Phyllis McGuire and the Chicago outfit, Honcho, Sam Giancana. Giancana would come and stay at the Velda Rose when the McGuire sisters were playing at the Vapors. Phyllis, it was just a short walk. You can see on my YouTube channel, Wayne, it's a very short walk from the Vapors, now a ministry, so the sign says, but it still has that 60s sort of casino-ish sign. There's a short walk from the Vapors to the Velda Rose, and she would go back and stay with Giancana at the Velda Rose under the watchful eye of the FBI the whole time. The FBI was under complete. By then, by the 60s, you know, you had the Capones and the Lucianos and the Frank Costellos, the Bugsy Siegels, all those guys coming through Hot Springs under somewhat surveillance, but it really picked up when the FBI put this special agent in charge in Hot Springs. The surveillance became a lot more aggressive. And by this time in the 60s, when Giancana was coming down there and Phyllis McGuire and all those people, it was pretty intense. So it all got shut down in 1967. And, you know, but didn't the racetrack, again, and it's funny because Oaklawn, when you look at the significance of horse racing in America, still is one of the most significant racetracks. As you know, when the Kentucky Derby kicks off the Triple Crown in May, you know, May through June with the Triple Crown, the Arkansas Derby leading right up to the Kentucky Derby is one of the most important races in the country, and usually the Arkansas Derby winner is the one that becomes one of the favorites in the Kentucky Derby. In fact, the last Triple Crown winner we had in 2015, American Pharoah, was an Arkansas Derby, came out of the Arkansas Derby. So it still has some significance in that world, but nowhere near like it was in its heyday.
It's incredible. I'm a big history geek, right? I love learning about American history because I think when we lose our sense of history, we have no idea where we're going, right? Because history is prologue.
Yes.
And to know a little bit about Hot Springs, I want to learn more. And to know that, now what's the book you mentioned before? Because I have to go and buy that book now.
Well, you know what's funny about it? There are a couple of really good books out of Hot Springs. It's called The Mob and the Spa. The Mob and the Spa, S-P-A.
Okay.
I picked it up at the Arlington one day about a year ago. The Arlington Hotel in Hot Springs. I happen to be in Hot Springs. It's by Orville Allbritton, O-R-V-A-L-E, Allbritton, A-L-L-B-R-I-T-T-O-N. And I thought, you know, I looked at the back cover, Wayne. I thought, you know, here's the guy who's associated with the local historical society. And I thought, you know, I mean, we've all picked up local books by historical. I don't mean to criticize those sort of books, but you always wonder about the validity of them. Is it based on rumor? How well researched and well written is it? So I didn't know what to expect. And when I read it, I was really extraordinarily impressed. I told Orville when I met with him last week, his research skills and his attribution is just spot on. He attributes everything. He sort of cuts through fact and rumor and just really tells some fascinating stories. He worked with the FBI and knows a lot of those stories firsthand. So Orville Albright. There's another really good book, too, by the guy who runs the Gangster Museum in Hot Springs. I met with him last week, too. It's called Hot Springs from Capone to Costello. His name is Robert Raines. So those two books, you know, it's maybe because it's in a remote location away from the big media centers of L.A. and New York, hasn't been made in the movies. Maybe that's why you don't see as much about Hot Springs, but its story is one of the most fascinating in the country, especially for those who are sort of underworld aficionados and like all those crime stories and so forth. It's so far removed from those centers that maybe it just didn't catch on the way the other places did.
Could be, but now perhaps is the time to get more attention to the subject because maybe we don't know what's going to happen. But now again, it seems to me. But not necessarily Hot Springs, but Arkansas is becoming more and more of a center of attention of new outbreaks of crime. We've had that horrific Sioux shooting in Little Rock, did we not?
Yeah, it's been rough in Little Rock, really rough. There was a series, and this is only a couple of weeks ago. I'm not talking about 1930s and 1899, you know, five law enforcement officers killed in a shootout between law enforcement. This was a couple of weeks ago. We had a dozen drive-by shootings in about 9 days in Little Rock. Capped off, there's no sense that I know of, at least, that they were associated necessarily, but capped off at a concert about a mile from the Capitol. A shooting broke out at a rap concert, and 28 people were injured, I think 25 with wounds, no one killed, thankfully. And I think three were either trampled or got injured in sort of the melee. But, yeah, so it's, you know, and we talked about you're going to see in a couple of months, you're going to see a movie about a guy named Barry Seal who turned Central Arkansas into literally the focal, the hub for cocaine importation for the Medellin cartel. I mean, literally. Mena, Arkansas, not far from Hot Springs, only about an hour and a half, in the 80s, was the central hub worldwide, the global hub. Of course, it was for the U.S. That this pilot chose this remote airport because it had a long runway. That's one reason speculation has it is because it has a long runway. And it was tucked into the mountains in the woods. And so no one knew where it was. And there's always been sort of a rough and tumble history to this state, partially because it's centrally located, partially because the mountainous terrain and the forestation allows for hidden illegal activity. Up in the Ozarks, you know, you have all kinds of allegations of pot and meth and things like that. So, yeah, it's always been sort of a rough and tumble place in that regard. Now, there's a lot going on otherwise. You know, you've got a lot of job growth, Walmart, and so forth. But for those who are crime aficionados, the stories are endless here.
Oh, absolutely. And we talk about our favorite CIA drug runner. You know, we have links, again, to the New Orleans Mafia families. We have links to the Miami Mafia crews, right? Why do I think that a good researcher, worth her salt, and there's a guy down in Florida, I'll have to send you his name and his link to his page you might find of interest, if we looked into it, we would find more and more mafia influence and organized crime influence in Arkansas in that area today.
Yeah, please let me know his name, Wayne. I'd love to talk to him. You know, the Medellin cartel with Pablo Escobar, who Later was killed. Fascinating book by Mark Bowden called about Pablo Escobar, and sort of the '80s Miami sort of war zone that the whole cocaine explosion caused in Miami. Right in the middle of that was this guy Barry Seal, who was transporting drugs to the U.S. for the Medellin cartel in Tamina, Arkansas. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a big connection. Of course, you know, Marcelo, back in his time, controlled this entire region. He was
he
basically oversaw from New Orleans. You couldn't even go into New Orleans if you were even a friendly member of another mafia family. You had to check in with Carlos Marcelo. And he even, you know, had influence over Dallas, Hot Springs. And so, yeah, his influence was big.
Absolutely. I mean, and he was not a man to trifle with.
You know, no, and, you know, I mean, allegedly, you know, bodies would be found in the swamps near his favorite restaurant of his down there in New Orleans. And, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine who worked for the mayor a couple of mayors ago in New Orleans. He was talking about how, you know, sort of all the discussion with law enforcement back then about bodies disappearing. But, you know, it's all centered on the money that's made by these underworld figures from vice. I mean, it's drugs, it's gambling, it's prostitution, and that's what Hot Springs was. I mean, it was literally a wide open town. Every big name figure of that bay, a vacation and stayed for a length of time in Hot Springs. Let me give you one more example. I know we're kind of switching back from Mena and New Orleans and Miami back to Hot Springs, but I want to give you another example of how even secondary roles, people who came up through that Hot Springs criminality, had big roles. There was a woman named Ida Devine. She married a guy named Irving Devine, who was another mobster who got to know Meyer Lansky, sort of the genius behind a lot of the mob activity in New York and Havana and Miami and Las Vegas. He got to know Lansky apparently either in Miami, or you made me think about this with Miami, Wayne, either Miami or Havana. So Devine was in Hot Springs and he met this local girl who, you know, worked in one of the clubs, and the romance ensued, and they got married and moved out to Las Vegas. Well, Lansky thought that a woman, he had two people transported. By then, Lansky had points in Las Vegas casinos, partial ownership. So by that time he was in Miami, though. Yeah, so his thought was the FBI would be watching a man, I don't know what his thing, transporting him back to Miami from Las Vegas. You know, the money that goes to the count room from the tables before it's counted for tax purposes, money skimmed off the top of those winnings. So through Irving Devine, Lansky thought Devine's wife would be less conspicuous to the FBI. So she became a courier. This Hot Springs girl living in Las Vegas at that time became a courier from Las Vegas to Miami, bringing Lansky as much as $84,000 a month just for himself in the skim from the Sands, the Flamingo, the Fremont, and the Horseshoe. Those were the casinos that Lansky was profiting from the skim, off the skim from. So Ida, the FBI called her the lady in mink, Wayne. Ida Devine from Hot Springs hated to fly, so she only took the train. And she would take circuitous routes from Las Vegas to Miami to sort of avoid the FBI. She'd go through St. Louis or Kansas City or Chicago or New Orleans. She would always go a different way. And so there's a really famous picture of her that the FBI snapped in the Chicago train station. She would carry a bag, a satchel, not a satchel, but sort of like a handbag, a purse, some other carry-on, with literally hundreds of thousands of dollars. One time she went through Hot Springs. She wanted to go back home, passed through Hot Springs before going on to Miami. A guy picked her up who ran a motel in town. Now, he later became a state representative. He became the county sheriff later. He picked her up at the train station. They were all pals. He said she had this bag with her. And, you know, at that time, of course, nobody knew she was a courier for the mob between Las Vegas and Meyer Lansky in Miami. He was just picking up an old friend of his from Hot Springs, Ida. So Ida gets off the train in Hot Springs Would not let go of that bag if you'd taken a crowbar and cracked her hands. This guy named Bud Canada, he later, as I say, became sheriff, said that she just wouldn't let go of it. So when you put the pieces together later, Wayne, it's obvious why she wouldn't let go of it. It had hundreds of thousands of dollars in illegally skimmed casino money going to Meyer Lansky in Miami. So now, as it turns out, a little side note to that, she died, is buried back in Hot Springs, where her family was. Irving, her husband, later remarried. When he died out in Las Vegas, his body was taken back to Hot Springs and buried next to hers, which is just one more of those sort of Hot Springs sort of mob criminality stories that just really adds to the aura of that place. Way it just never stops.
No, it doesn't stop. It is a fascinating history. You know, and going back to gambling and how it's progressing in the United States today, there's more and more cities that want to have that casino. Illinois, they can't think of a place they can't put a casino. They want one in Rockford. They want one, I think, north near the Wisconsin-Illinois-Moore border because they feel that more casinos will solve all their economic problems. Well, yeah, it's taxing the poor and the uneducated, you know, but that's a discussion for another day. People want to gamble. There's no doubt about that, sir.
Well, I was talking to a guy in Hot Springs last week about that. You know, he said he hosted a convention with a major hotel, U.S. hotel company, in Hot Springs. I mean, it still is a place, Wayne, where conventions are. I mean, it's, you know, it's a small town. I don't mean to sort of overinflate it, make it sound like Havana in its day or Miami or, you know, Las Vegas. I mean, clearly it's a smaller town, but it still has that convention appeal. And inevitably, the issue came up from one of these hotel executives, will there ever be casinos in Hot Springs again? That is sort of the discussion on the plate now. I mean, as I say, at Oaklawn, which is in Hot Springs, it's just, I don't know, just, you know, maybe I didn't do it on my odometer, but maybe a mile or so down the main drag from downtown, maybe a little farther out than that. But there are slot machines in the Oaklawn racetrack, sort of an auxiliary area. It's attached to the racetrack, but so you can gamble that way. You know, a lot of speculation is at some point maybe they'll revisit. There was a ballot question during the last election in Northwest Arkansas, Bentonville and Fayetteville, whether to have casinos. So it was rejected. But you know, there is some thought, like you say, where you are, Wayne. There is some thought that, you know, when you look around, forever it was Las Vegas, Reno, and Atlantic City. Now you have riverboat casinos, you know, you've got, you know, Native American. I mean, just on and on. Everybody's pretty close to a casino nowadays.
Yeah, I went to Milwaukee, which is a 40-minute drive. I probably have another 40-minute drive if I want to go to the one near Chicago or so. I mean, again, people want to gamble. And the government can't get revenue from that way. It's better than raising my property taxes. This is voluntary, right? It's like lottery tickets. And do I buy a lottery ticket? Yes. Do I expect to win? No. Why do I buy them? Somebody has to, right? Somebody has to win. And it's kind of tempting. A dollar versus $200 million? Yeah, I'll do that once in a while, right?
Well, that's what these governments. Go ahead. Sorry, Wayne.
I'm sorry. No, my apologies. I cut you off.
No, I was just going to say, and for a lot of these politicians, you know, in Arkansas, the sales tax is high. A lot of economists think it's a regressive tax. It hits poorer people harder. You know, it's hard to raise property taxes. It's hard to raise sales taxes for politicians. You know, they suffer at the ballot when they raise taxes. So a lot of them see, you know, again, this is opinion based on what you hear from people in political campaigns, but what you hear from a lot of those people is, you know, some public officials think vice taxes, sin taxes are easier to raise.
Oh, without a doubt. And what gets me, and maybe it's sort of for another show, is to do the idea of sin taxes and how those things develop, I'm thinking, is without a doubt Colorado makes more money than God with cannabis and cannabis taxes, as is California, Oregon, Washington, and the other states where it's illegal, right? If Wisconsin, because we used to grow hemp back in the day, if we allow cannabis we would do well with the millions of dollars of cannabis sales we would have. It would help fix the roads. It would help pay for the schools and other things that the state needs so badly.
Medical marijuana passed in Arkansas the last election. Is there, what's the deal in Wisconsin now? Is there, and I should know this, but I don't. Is there any cannabis, medical or recreational?
Thank you for asking. You can have some of the oils, but they had to fix that law because the first law they managed to pass through great opposition from the Wisconsin Timber League, gee, fancy that, you could use the oils medically, but you cannot possess them. So we'll let you give it to your children.
If you have a medical need or recreation.
No. If you had a medical need, it's my understanding.
Okay.
I'm not an expert because they fixed the law. If it was okay to prescribe a medical oil for your child, say for epilepsy, right? But if I went out to try to buy that oil, I could go to jail.
Okay.
But they fixed it.
And
they fixed it finally.
And what are there in Wisconsin? What's in Wisconsin now? Again, I should know this. I apologize. In terms of gaming, are there riverboat casinos? Are there dock casinos?
No, we don't have riverboat.
What's
the status is the Indians can have them. The Indians can have them. Some of the tribes do. They try to put one in Kenosha. That was going to be brought into town by a situation via the Seminole Indian tribe and the Mohawks, I believe, out of New York. And it never went through because... I'm sorry. If you want true corruption, in my opinion, look at Indian gaming. If you want true corruption beyond your imagination. But it's like any other thing. You have a lot of money involved. It draws sometimes the weirdest elements ever.
There's no question about that. I mean, as you know, I used to be a reporter in Nevada. I worked for a governor as his press secretary. I mean, I have developed probably too much cynicism when I see – you know, I'm not going to assert that you know, this or that specific, you know, operator is corrupt. But you always have to question when that kind of money is involved, where the influence is coming from. And that sort of gets back full circle to what we talked about with Hot Springs, Wayne. The reason it operated so openly, illegally, but openly, until 1967 was sporadic, you know, blips. Was corruption. Corruption. Palms were greased, man. Palms were greased. There's just no question about it.
Yes, sir. And since before we lose the show, because we're up against the time, where can we find you on your social media, sir?
Wayne, thanks for asking that. I am. I write the Mafia Chronicles on newsbreaker.com, news with a Z, NEWZBREAKER, newsbreaker.com. The Mafia Chronicles. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. Send me, please send me story ideas, things you know. I'm always interested in anything Mafia related.
Thank you so much again, sir. You are an absolutely wonderful human being to give me so much for your time and share so much of your knowledge. You are a great resource for anyone who might be interested in this topic, and we all need to be more so, I feel. But once again, sir, I'm going to thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I wish you and yours the very, very best.
Same to you, my friend. Thanks so much, Wayne.
Thank you all. And thank you all for so much for listening. I apologize for that glitch with the lost connection. It happens. I apologize for that. There's not much we can do. We drive on to the best job we can. And I thought we did good with that. Anyway, thanks again for listening. I appreciate it. Thanks again for listening. I really, truly, truly, I'm thankful for the number of new listeners of the show, and those numbers keep going up. I appreciate the fact that you understand that you can find really good guests here, because you're not coming here to the show. Listen, my great knowledge and wisdom, you can come in here, which I'm thankful for the number of great guests I've been able to have on the show over time. And again, I thank everyone. May God bless you. Keep everybody safe. All right, have fun. Stay away from the drones. Bye-bye.